actually, it was called Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone originally, but when they imported it to the U.S., they changed the title. By the way, have you seen Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone? Well, let's talk about it then.
Running fascists, kill off it. It's futuristic, like Carnegie the Magnificent. Rewind your VCR, rewind your cassette. Nintendo pilots, flying up ahead. Captain's love, John Luke Bacard. Bumarize, seal glide, the weapon covered shine. Out on your street tonight, you're retarded.
Meth. Meth is fun.
It's what's for dinner.
Where's the meth?
Where's the meth?
That classic slogan.
Yep.
Oh, fuck my butt.
All our parents remember. Only 80s kids will get this one.
Welcome to Contextual Deviance. My name is Christian Hagen. Every episode on this show, we discuss a particular piece of pop culture art, in this case, movies, from various contexts and perspectives, chosen at random using our contextual chalice. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. David Gutchy.
Hey.
His classic catchphrase.
Yeah, I don't know if he caught it.
He did it.
But so far, it's going to become a thing. It is a thing. We're going to make shirts, and it'll be very obvious that they are Contextual Deviants shirts.
Somehow. But literally all it's going to say is hey, and we're just going to trust that people are going to get it.
Comic Sans, baby.
Comics. How dare you, sir?
Hey, I...
Oh. Oh,
that's my second catchphrase.
Okay.
It's like a rocking chair sound effect kind of.
You're just in a squeaky chair. And you're like,
yeah. Don't make me mad. Well, that was yours.
frequent listeners of the show.
Yeah. Shout out to our biggest fans that know all our sweet classic catchphrases. Right,
from like last episode.
Yeah, I think that was the only one.
I think that was it. Oh, man. Well, this time around, we are talking about a very successful film.
Unlike all the other ones.
We've only done like obscure indie dramas so far.
Well, we did watch a movie called The Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yes, this episode we are discussing the family-friendly fantastical adventure Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeet.
From 2001, directed by Christopher Columbus, who also famously, as we double-checked, directed Home Alone, starring a group of relatively successful British older actors and complete newcomers, British childrens.
Yeah.
Actual childs. Actual.
Yeah.
What
were they? Were they 10, 11, 12?
They were all roughly in the same age. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the kid who played Draco was the youngest.
Nice. Yeah. He looked about like 4 or 5.
I could be wrong. Now, you want to know what? You want to know something that I wish I didn't know, but I'm kind of. Well, I know for a fact that Rupert Grint, who played Ron.
Yeah.
Had another role before this one.
Oh.
In a Nickelodeon Films studio production called Thunderpants. About a young, flatulent child with two stomachs who is so gassy that his friend and child scientist Rupert Grint builds him a pair of rocket pants powered by his farts. And then the child just goes on a series of adventures, like fart related adventures. Yeah. My favorite storyline is
there are multiple storylines.
Oh, there's a bunch. He helps out an opera singer who's going on tour singing this particularly difficult piece, and there's a note that he can't hit. It's just too high. But he hears this kid fart in the exact pitch that he needs.
It's beautiful.
And so he hires the kid to like follow him around from town to town and stand backstage with a microphone to his butt. Like, and when it comes to time to hit that high note, he'll like fake it. And then the kid just farts into the microphone.
It's so believable.
But here's the thing. Here's where it goes. It gets real crazy. because it's already pretty weird.
This was Nickelodeon original movie.
I don't know if it was on Nickelodeon, but it was Nickelodeon Studios.
Nickelodeon Studios, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was straight to DVD.
I mean, if that got a theatrical release.
Because then the kid farts in such a frequency that a lighting rig above the singer fails, falls on his head and kills him.
Whoa,
and then the
whoa.
Child, hang on, the child is put on trial for murder and is convicted and sentenced to die by a firing squad. And they literally have a scene of this fat kid standing in front of a firing squad blindfolded, and they like offer him a cigarette as a joke. And then like... And then he's saved at the last minute by a group of, if I'm not mistaken, CIA operatives who need his help with his thunder pants,
right,
his rocket pants, to save someone on the ISS, the International Space Station.
He can also go into space?
With his thunder pants.
Oh, my God. Oh, whew.
It is
this
like
is good.
No, it is like an hour and 45 minutes of just pure madness.
Next week on Contextual Deviants.
Honestly, I had it on DVD, but I lost it.
Yeah.
I don't know what
you
happened
to it.
Like I probably like gave like threw it away or something. Or put it, you know. I don't throw movies away. I probably gave it to a fucking Goodwill or something.
Yeah. It's okay. You can say you threw it away.
I threw it away.
Throw it away.
Threw it away. Threw it away now.
that helps me sort of get into the head of Rupert during the flying broomstick scene, because I bet he couldn't help but remember the fond Thunderpants days and think, oh, if only I were in a sequel to that movie and not this wizard bullshit.
Man, I really had a good thing going with Thunderpants.
Yeah, why did I ever leave that
now
franchise?
Now I'm stuck doing this shit.
Sorry, parents, not going to make you any money.
So before we get into the context, I think we should discuss right up front the major difficulty we're going to have in this episode, which is we have decided that we are going to act as if this movie exists on its own with no sequels and the books don't exist. So the Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone is the only movie in this universe and franchise. It is a standalone picture and we have to talk about it accordingly.
Yep.
It's going to be hard as shit to keep things straight, and we'll probably screw up at some point. But
yeah, but you know what? We got this.
I just am really fascinated by how this is going to go.
I mean, if we've learned anything from this show, it's that constraints are fun.
Constraints are fun is the tagline that I've been working on for this show for a while now.
Yeah, Constraints Are Fun is actually the name of my BDSM-themed sequel to Shades of Grey series.
Sorry?
The Constraints Are Fun, you know. Like whipping and tying people up and sex.
You realize the 50 Shades series was already BDSM themed.
Yeah, no, it's now even.
So when you're like, well, my BDSM themed sequel to this BDSM franchise, the only thing that anyone knows about it.
Well, I figured that like, yeah, I get it, E.L. James. Yeah, you did it.
Oh,
like
I
BDSM.
Get it.
But what if there was like another B? And another D.
Okay.
And maybe even another S and another M. So it's BBDDESSMM. What if, like, you just kind of ramped it up? Just kind of give me more of that.
BB8SM?
Yeah. I mean, that's a thing, probably, right? Like, Star Wars is popular, and so is sex. So it's out there.
Hey, Star Wars is popular, and so is sex. It's what I say every day when I look in the mirror. To psych myself up.
Yeah.
Yep. Star Wars is popular, so is sex.
The
Here
Beatles,
we go.
Jesus, Star Wars, sex. Big four.
The big four.
BJSS, the new BDSM. All right, let's talk about Harry Potter.
Yeah, hey.
Now that we've said a lot of sex stuff at the beginning of our 10-year-old's movie episode, let's do it.
Yeah, this movie came out in 2001. We were children, roughly.
Yeah, roughly. Wait, 2001, I was 14? Yeah, I was 14.
Mm.
I was old.
Mm.
I was too old for Harry Potter.
Really?
I was not, but I was not allowed to read the books, so.
Oh!
I sort of missed the whole movie boat, too, because I never got on the book train, although the books don't exist.
You missed the movie boat and...
And the train. No,
because
yeah.
Because you
books
missed
are
the book train.
Trains.
You were going to do the book train to the movie boat.
That was my connection.
Right. It was
but the movie boat left without me because I took the 8-track ferry to try to get to the movie boat.
Okay, A-track ferry.
A-track ferry.
And the like CD plane took the off CD before plane, you could get on it as well.
And so I jumped on a pamphlet horse and I just hoofed it.
Pamphlet
horse. I was trying to think of something that was like pre-book and I was like, I don't know. Pamphlet. I mean, the oral tradition walking.
The oral like, tradition walking.
Is that a thing?
I'm on my oral tradition hike today. Christ. Let's, you know what? You know what I think we should do? I think we should start the podcast over. Oh, yeah, let's do that. All right, first context of the night. David, you want to draw this thing?
I do.
All right, here we go.
Draw
here we
something.
Go. And the first context of the night is...
Ooh, scene-by-scene soundtrack.
Nice.
Make one up or choose alternate songs. Wait.
Yeah.
Explain that to me, like, in the... Or actually, you know, explain it to everyone.
So I think for this one, you know, obviously when I say scene by scene, I mean more like important scene or like relevant scene. We just think of like what songs would pair well with different scenes and how would that change the like tone and effect of those scenes? Because obviously right now we've got this film scored by John Williams.
Pretty conventional.
But pretty conventional.
It's his middle name.
Yeah. So it's and I realized, by the way, that one of the main motifs musically in this score is also in Home Alone. If you listen closely to the Home Alone score, there's like a couple spots where it's like pretty much the same. And I was
there's also the main theme to this movie specifically, not the Harry Potter theme, but like the Sorcerer's Stone theme,
right?
I've noticed is very similar to a song that I don't know the name of, but it's the do 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 do. It's like Beethoven.
Or that?
No, it's not what I meant.
Okay, then I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I'm sorry.
I'll figure it out.
All right,
forget all of this.
Cool.
It's a little thing that I was like, that's so simple. Like those four
crazy little thing called Love by Queen.
Oh yeah, I was thinking Beethoven, but then I was thinking Queen.
All right, so let's highlight some scenes and think what song could we do under this to really change things up. Let's start with how about the scene when they're on the boats headed towards the castle?
Yeah, that's good.
It's a beautiful night, starry night scene, and this sort of spooky approach to the castle on water. What song could we put under that?
I got you.
Yeah, okay.
Hans Zimmer.
Okay.
The Dark Knight. Joker in the middle of the fancy party song. It's just that one note and then another dissonant note on top of that note. And it just kind of builds and gets a little bit more and more dissonant and a little bit louder and louder, and it's incredibly uncomfortable.
Okay.
I think that certainly helps the terror that all of these children are feeling. This giant is leading them on these boats. It's a scary thing. Okay. This movie wasn't scary enough.
Oh, I see.
And I think you could make it more scary.
So your conceit is that the music alone would make this, and I agree with you, that music would make that scene much more terrifying.
And maybe out of nowhere, if the rest of the music of the beginning of the movie was left alone, and then all of a sudden this silent scene of boats approaching a castle was scored by horror movie music, essentially.
Yeah. No, I hear you. That I think that does work in that context. If we're looking to like make it scarier through music, that would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
Or well, no, let's take a do you have any ideas for that scene?
Well, I was thinking like the lazy version of that would be like Smoke on the Water.
That's a fun joke.
Yeah.
And I like a reinterpretation of the whole movie with song name, like pop songs with names that have to do with certain we could do that. But I think Welcome to the Jungle popped into my head, but then I was like, no, not then. I think that's like during the not the tour, the Sorting Hat ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they're all entering, that's when you play Welcome to the Jungle and the ghosts are all flying around.
I was thinking maybe like the intro music to Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
That would be good.
Just some like some real Dr. Dre style, like and then like the beat under it, just like something like that, a lot of keys, weird synthy stuff, but that could be fun.
I think in the Snape potions first scene where Snape really just gives it to Harry Potter.
Just hams the fuck up.
We play Humble by Kendrick Lamar. I think that works pretty well.
Yeah.
Because he's essentially telling him to sit down.
No, bitch, sit down.
He's like,
humble.
Hey, Harry, sit down.
Be humble.
Be humble.
Be humble.
I think it would fit the mood of the movie, too.
Yeah, it would fit so perfectly. Yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, so far there's no dissonance at all.
Honestly, it's like at this point, I'm like trying to imagine like a hip-hop version of the Harry Potter score, and I'm kind of into it.
No, it could work.
I mean, it wouldn't work at all, but like...
But it worked.
Well, I guess... It would definitely change a lot of the effect and tone of the film, not just in terms of like... being very jarring, but also in terms of like they tried so hard to make it this sort of like whimsical British children's fantasy. Yeah. And I just like the idea of it being really like the music just being like harder edged, like South Central.
Okay. So yes, no,
like,
this is
very Compton. Like basically the soundtrack is straight out of Compton.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this deviates a little bit from that, but all I do is win could happen after the Quidditch match.
Oh yeah. That would be perfect.
I mean, that actually would maybe that would even work. Like in
or like when they win the House Cup at the end and everyone's celebrating.
And everyone's celebrating. It's like a sports team won a thing. Mm-hmm. You play All I Do Is Win. That's what happens in real life. Might as well happen in Hogwarts.
Why not?
And Drake started from the bottom plays when he looks out the window after he gets to Hogwarts and he's like thinking about all of his shitty past and he's like petting Hedwig and he's just like, I can't believe I'm here.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I started from the bottom.
I started
now,
from like drawing birthday cakes for myself. And the whole team's here. His whole team. Ron
whole
and
team.
Hermione and that owl and that big hairy guy. They're all there.
I think maybe going off that then the scene where they're like fighting the troll, I think like Kanye's monster would be really good under there.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And like when Hermione is like shuffling around, that's when Nicki's verse kicks in.
Yeah. Another Kanye song could be good when Hagrid's telling Harry about Tom Riddle, about Voldemort, who you can't say power.
Power. Yeah, yeah. Power. Yeah.
Yep.
yep.
No, this is a good movie. It has too many songs in it.
That's true.
Also, like scenes that barely have score.
No,
have whole rap songs.
Here's even better. It's a jukebox musical. They're singing the whole time.
No. Hagrid is like, no one man should have.
It's diegetic music. Everyone's. Oh, no. Oh, man. That would be the worst.
I mean, again.
It would be the worst because I find jukebox musicals to be unwatchable.
Yeah.
But, yes.
But, hey, knowing that Harry Potter exists as an artifact now and changing it to be that could be a fun little playful a poke.
What would the three-headed dogs, what would Fluffy's music be?
Oh shit, DMX, but what's the song called?
Oh, X Gonna Give It To You?
Yeah.
Or
well, because he
any one of
barks.
Any DMX
like,
song
like,
really
barks
it just barks
songs. Like DMX for sure is
oh my god,
this is a very specific segment for people.
But what I love here's my idea. All of the music is like very hard edge hip hop until they get to, except for the scene when they're learning how to fly on their broomsticks, and it's just the Foo Fighters Learn to Fly. It just like breaks in with that, kills the whole vibe. Like, yeah, it just loses all consistency.
Oh, that is pretty good.
Now, okay. Now we're having a lot of fun here today.
But let's get serious.
What? I don't know how to get serious with this.
This
is a weird one.
I think a lot of the stuff that happens in the movie, there's a lot of hijinks.
Yeah.
Like a lot, actually. Most of the first half of the movie is just sort of like things blowing up by accident, people falling off their broomsticks.
Just lots of weird shit where Harry's like, whoa.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're experiencing the movie through Harry.
Right.
And he's like, what is all this? And even, like, Ron is still like, whoa, I've never seen this because he's never been there before. He's first year. Everybody, you know, we're all first years at Hogwarts.
Yes.
And, you know.
We all are.
And so it makes sense that a lot of it is just like, wow. And it's honestly like, this is kind of a testament to John Williams, but like, I can't think of more appropriate music for it than happy, lilty, British fun about music that he made. Like, Yeah. I'm struggling.
Well, here's where I'm at. Here's an interesting lens to it that I don't think the movie really... Obviously, the movie doesn't take this tact, and I totally understand why. But Harry is the fish out of water in this series. Yeah. He's
fish
grown-
soundtrack? is that what you're going for?
That is not what I was going for. And but now that you say it...
Terrible.
No. There was a... what the fuck was that? Oh, I was going to say that, like... So he's from the sort of, like... The sort of street level or just sort of like a poorish British upbringing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's like real yardy. Like he's got like a lot of like grime in his backpack. And he comes into this like magical kingdom where everyone's like living like it's, you know, a couple hundred years ago, but they're flying around on broomsticks and shit. And they've got their own like classical music and the like the choral stuff and whatever. And then he comes in and he's like the street tough. He's like, I don't know what any of y'all, I don't know why I said y'all.
Y'all. Oh, he's from the South.
He's South a yardie.
Britain.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
It would be sort of like, I don't know where I'm going with that.
But I...
Just some, like, Dizzy Rascal or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think British music is important. I think Chris Columbus would like it to be British. I think you could definitely infuse some, like, Brit pop if you wanted. There's plenty of fun to be had with
that. Technically, it is set in 1992.
Yeah. See, like, there's actual Muggle bands that these kids definitely would have been listening to.
Yeah.
If they wanted to get rights to those songs.
Well, that's... Well, never mind. We can't.
We can't.
We can't we go can't. Outside the fiction of the can't. Movie. I almost did already.
No.
Son of a bitch.
You can't. So... I mean, what about, like, the Ramones, the Clash, like... Just sort of bouncy stuff like that.
Yeah, like so sort of like a rock and roll high school kind
of
vibe.
Yeah, right. I mean, it is almost a high school.
I mean, no, it is. I mean, they're all kids. They're like, it's like a wacky, messed up kind of school, but it's still a school. It's
still a school.
And so you get that sort of like schoolyard rock kind of like Blitzkrieg bop and like some Joan Jett, like pretty much the Freaks and Geeks soundtrack.
Yes. And where does Bob O'Reilly go, though?
What
scene is Bob O'Reilly? Let's just take Freaks and Geeks soundtrack, just put it on top of Harry Potter.
That would definitely go when they win the House Cup and everyone's celebrating.
Yeah, because that's a very triumphant song.
Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. That'd be good.
So they could have just bought the rights to Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
And not all those individual songs. And just taken the soundtrack, put it over the top.
Right, because that definitely worked for the show Freaks and Geeks.
Which is pretty much Harry Potter.
Right. But I do think, I'm not saying it would have been the right thing to do, but I'm saying that, like, if we're approaching a movie like this, trying to think of it in terms of, like, what would a movie that had licensed, like, actual music...
Right.
Like, what kind of songs would they tap into, and what mood would that evoke without making it too different? I mean, it would still be different, but I think it would capture sort of a youthful energy, which is what they're really going for.
That's the whole movie.
Yeah.
Is like exploration, curiosity, fuck the adults.
A little bit. Like, there is a fair amount of fuck the adults
there
in this
is.
Movie.
He's a disobedient little guy.
Yeah, they get in all sorts of ruckus.
Yeah, and so I think some innocent... British pop punk is really the answer.
Until they're in the woods, and then there's that scene with the hooded figure who comes at him, and then it just goes straight heavy metal.
Yeah.
Like, it goes real, like, Cannibal Corpse-y for a second.
Oh, just rough.
Like, squealing pig noises, and then just, like, the dirtiest
experimental
fucking...
metal.
Yeah. Exactly. let's do another context. How does that
sound? All right. Great.
So music...
Music. Definitely there's potential for a jukebox musical
jukebox hard rap. Like, you gotta have like some fucking
Drake doesn't belong in there.
Drake's too lightweight. You gotta have some like New Kingdom, some like Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
Some like something real, some Old Dirty Bastard for sure. Yeah.
DMX as the dog, I think, is the best one.
Yeah.
Like, that just...
And every scene involving anyone from Slytherin, there's got to be some, like, Odd Future, some, like, Tyler, the Creator, like, something real slimy and gross.
Yeah.
Fucking Yonkers is the theme for Draco.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, this is a disaster, but I really want to watch it now.
Absolutely. If I had the time, the inclination, the technology, and any idea of how to do it, I would love to do a re-edit of this movie with like just a lot of
that is
rap music as the score.
It'd be tough.
It would have to take
the music out of the movie.
A waste of several months of my life, I bet.
But at least you'd make a lot of money.
Would I? I think I would, if anything, probably get sued by somebody.
But think of all that money you would lose.
All right, let's try another context. Context number two. Do 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 sip boop a do shoob.
Uh-oh. What if it were set in high school?
All right, that would have been amazing.
I mean, is that in there?
It's still in there because we didn't do it last week. That's the rule, by the way, for listeners of the show, is we take out the ones that we did last episode. But everything that's in there, I mean, if it was two episodes ago, like this one was three episodes ago.
Ooh.
So we're bringing back an old favorite.
Callback, ding, 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 ding. That's a soundboard cell for a bell. You know how
we're thinking of this movie in terms of there being no sequels, no whatever else? If you pulled a Peter Jackson and split this into three movies, how would you do it?
Yes. Okay, no, this is great. Yeah. So we're splitting Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone
into three movies.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I mean, as is the guy, God, this movie is tough because it's such an obvious first act of a movie, but we have to chop it. We have to chop and screw it. First film called the trilogy. Yeah, and the first film is called Privet Drive.
Harry Potter and the Cupboard Under the Stairs.
Right, yeah, and the Cupboard Under the Stairs. Yeah, or just the Cupboard Under the Stairs, or the boy who lived, or something like that. But like, and we're not really sure what it means, and it might not even be Harry Potter related, but it, like Harry Potter, the Cupboard Under the Stairs. I like that one.
Yeah.
And it is just it's like an orphan story.
Yeah.
It's Dickensian. And he's like trying to make it. He's drawing birthday cakes for himself and blowing out the candles and saying, "Make a wish, Harry," to himself, which is the fucking saddest thing ever. By the way, how on earth, good God.
Yeah, it's very sad.
And then when he does get a real birthday cake, his fat friend eats it.
His fat cousin eats it.
Yeah, he's like, "Oh, I'm going to eat this nasty cake that Hagrid pooped out."
Well, advantage of what we don't get a lot of in this movie, we only get a little bit of it, is him accidentally doing magic. Not realizing that he can do magic, but then weird shit happening. And then like him being like, "Whoa, why did that glass not? Why am I talking to a snake?" Right. Like all that sort of like magical weirdness shit.
We pretty much
get the one scene. Yeah.
And Hagrid throws it out. He's like, "Hey, how many times have you made something happen and it just sort of happened and you didn't realize why?" But like, we could have had a good half hour of a childhood like Matilda, where he sort of experiments with
Matilda. Is a great example. His dad is very similar.
Basically Danny DeVito in Matilda his uncle is the nastiest and the worst.
100%.
Which is Matilda, because her parents are the nastiest and the worst.
Yeah, basically we're basically just remaking Matilda.
We want Matilda to be the first movie.
The only difference is that it's Matilda, but before Matilda actually goes to school.
Right. Yeah. It's all preschool Matilda.
It's all preschool Matilda.
Yeah.
Now this is another question.
Where does Harry Potter?
That's a question.
Yeah.
That's a question that in this movie we do not get the answer to. Is does he go to a school before Hogwarts?
Honestly, I doubt it. I bet he's not even a citizen. they're keeping him prisoner, and I'm surprised he's not dead. Like, the conditions in which he lives is like a little dungeon.
Yeah.
With no vitamin D, and he gets to eat like the poop from their butts. Like, what does he even eat? Do they feed him?
Is he like
he cooked
the back end of a human
centipede? Yeah, essentially. metaphorically, he is the back end
of
the Dursley's human centipede.
That's got to be a fanfic somewhere.
Oh yeah,
I just assume the worst.
Yep, Ron Hermione and Harry.
Oh no,
who's on your peed anyway?
Hang on. Stop the show. We have to keep talking about who's in your feed.
What's my favorite reality
show? I can't.
New podcast, Who's on Your
Peed? Now, let me ask you, is this a thing that you just came up with just now?
Yes.
All right, so Who's in Your Peed is maybe the greatest question that I've never heard before, and
it's like
so
a Mount Rushmore, but for the nasty
people. Worst. But like, but here's the thing. No. Here's it.
Okay.
Is it Who's in Your Peed in terms of like you're making a human centipede? Who do you put in it? Or is it a Who's in Your Peed where you're forced to be in a human centipede? You have to figure out what segment you're in and who else is in it with you.
I mean, both of those are great.
Both of those are amazing.
I think we've stumbled on a new segment for the hypothetical.
No, for serious. Who's in your peed? It's like fuck, marry, kill, but you're basically, but it's so much worse. There's really no good option.
No, I mean, front is the best option.
The front is the best option, but even then, like, woof.
Yeah.
The guilt you're living with.
The guilt.
It's like survivor's guilt, but the people are still alive and they're attached
and
to
you're pooping in
and
them.
You're pooping in them.
Oh, human centipede, why are you so bad?
Why are you so bad and gross and...
Human centipede, who's in your peed?
But hey, who's in your peed?
Who's in your peed?
Oh boy.
Anyway,
I think we can all agree that Ron would be the last segment in the peed, right?
He literally gets shit on this whole movie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he'd be the last one.
Right.
Poor Ron. God. There's like issues of class too. Anyway, maybe we'll get to that.
Maybe we'll get to that.
So I'm sorry, I genuinely forgot the context because I was so excited
about Who's in Your Peed.
First movie is
so this movie
Matilda-ish.
Is basically a peed. This movie trilogy is basically a peed.
So first segment
of the human centipede, the Harry Potter peed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Is
100%. I'm gonna tell Asia about that as soon as I get home.
Oh, no, that's good.
Oh my god,
she needs to know because I want to know who's in her peed.
I know this is probably one of those things that people are going to be listening to it, and it's like it's not that funny, but like, for fuck's sake, it just blows me away that is a thing I've never heard before, and now that I can't stop thinking about
it. It's a good question.
Oh man, who's in your peed?
One of the big ones.
So the first movie is this sort of like Matilda-esque orphan story,
but with a sort of a dawning of there's going to be more because you're meant for something, Harry. Like Hagrid showing up.
Would be the end of the movie.
Is the end of the movie. And him, you're a wizard, Harry, might be the last line in the movie. What do you think?
I feel like there would have to be... No, I feel like it would have to be him leaving with Harry. Like, taking him away from the Dursleys. Because he you're a wizard, but then he has to sort of, like, explain why it is. Because, like, we're also making a kid's movie. And I feel like kids wouldn't be like, you're a wizard, Harry. And they'd be like, what?
Yeah,
like,
that's
what?
Fair.
You need to have some, it would be an exposition dump, but it already kind of is one.
Yeah. I think he would do some magic to the Dursleys.
Yes.
In that moment, Hagrid and Harry would sort of team up. It would be a comical thing with like,
I mean, really, you could just keep that scene exactly as it is. If you wanted to. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Harry would get a chance to do some redemptive violence because he doesn't really.
I don't think Hagrid does. Well, I guess it depends on how you want to. Yeah, characterize that's Harry true. Potter. That's I have a true. Feeling it would be nicer if he didn't.
Yeah, surprisingly, yes, I think.
Yeah. Because I don't know.
Good person.
So what would the second movie be, though?
The second movie is... it's training. It's going to school. It's making new friends. It's the high school movie.
Yeah.
To the Matilda of the first movie.
And he's like learning about the wizarding world. He's learning about presumably some of the things that happened in the first movie of like weird unexplained magical things. He's now learning why that happened and how it happened.
Right.
And so he's sort of piecing some things together and also like going through the learning and exposition. But then like things start creeping in, like things aren't as they seem.
Right.
Or there's like secrets.
You have to cast a lot of doubt. There's like Snape is keeping secrets and we got that rock that Hagrid got the bag that Hagrid got from the vault. Maybe that's like one of the first or second scenes in the movie to sort of be like, hey, he's going to go get to be at wizard school and that's really cool. But also nefarious purposes.
Exactly. And definitely a lot of friendship stuff.
Oh, I mean, most of the movie is friendship, I think.
It's like these friendships developing. Probably, there'd probably be more tension, like, because there's already a little bit of tension, but I feel like they'd probably build it up more with, like how the three of them eventually become really good friends, but they do have some struggles, especially early on. But, like, where would it end?
Where does it end?
I feel like this movie...
That's actually tough.
The first movie is pretty easy to differentiate, but the second and third ones, like, where do you draw those lines?
Blurred lines. Robin Thicke directs the second movie.
Robin Thicke scores and directs the second movie.
Dirty Babe. That's Justin Timberlake.
That's Justin Timberlake.
What's up?
Hey.
You know what? Fuck you, Robin Thicke. I don't even care. I'm just going to sing Justin Timberlake.
Okay.
I don't care about Robin Thicke.
No one does.
Thank you.
I don't even know if Alan Thicke cares about Robin Thicke.
No, Alan Rickman cares about Alan Thickman.
Alan Thickman.
That's a person.
Yes.
The second movie. Okay, so like where, like what are the significant events?
See, that's okay. So you got Quidditch, which
I mean, maybe it ends with them like winning Quidditch, but then like none of the bigger plot stuff comes up, or like
no.
Because you can't have
some bigger plot stuff. Maybe
arrange how things happen.
Maybe it ends with them like learning about the Sorcerer's Stone, and like piecing together like, oh shit, that's what's been going on. Like all this weird sort of like mystery stuff. Turns out there's this thing here, and it's like someone's trying to get it and we have to get to it first. And it's setting up a third movie that's like
it's all about the quest. It's all that, the big action, the Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
They're gonna get it.
Would Return of the Jedi qualify?
No,
that?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't think it would.
And then the third movie kind of does itself at that point. You just elongate the journey and the conflicts and maybe the confrontation with Voldy.
And, you know, obviously not acknowledging any other piece of Harry Potter media, but certainly the final trials could be extended and they could add some parts of the quest.
Actually,
and, like,
that whole like
more obstacles,
all of the like chess and all of that stuff that happens in the dungeons.
They play a real time game of chess.
An actual game of chess with timers and they smack them and it's cool like in the parks.
Those guys in the parks.
Like, I just think that actually like a good 45 minutes of the movie could be trials that are just really creative.
It could be more than 45 minutes. It would be like most of the movie.
Actually,
but
now
like,
that I think about how much of the movie is that, it would be.
The trials would have to be sort of like more character tailored, because they already kind of are a little bit, but you'd have to like reveal more details of character. And I think if they do it right, they could do it in such a way that really like drives home the friendship message from the second
movie.
It's like they're developing these relationships. They're like, they're still not really close friends, but they're in this thing together because they've all sort of discovered parts of the mystery together. Like, it's like, oh shit, I know this part. You know, like, so now the three of them have all sort of uncovered this mystery together, maybe not through their own volition, but just like it just has happened to the three of them. And so now it's about them learning about each other and then like humanizing them, solving puzzles and like learning about their histories and realizing that they are very close and that they do work together as a team.
They all have different things to offer, but they're a team now because they've had these shared experiences of almost dying over and over and over and over again.
And maybe we get some more hints as to why Harry Potter is so special.
I think that would also be true. I think you get a little bit of Voldemort stuff in the second movie. I was going to say season two. What if this was three seasons of a television show? You get more Voldemort in act two, in movie two, than you do in the second hour of Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
Stone.
You know what?
Some hints.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that because Voldemort as a concept doesn't come up until he gets to Diagon Alley. But what if we're doing this in a three movie structure, the first movie is all about him learning that he's a wizard. The second movie is about him discovering this mystery at Hogwarts, but also why he himself is so special.
Because you don't get any of the Lillian and whatever the other.
Right. Lillian James kind of stuff.
Maybe you don't get any of that.
Maybe they just, they like push the reveal of that later.
Yep.
So it's like more about him learning about the world, but then like people are kind of treating him differently and stuff's kind of like going on around him.
Him being a celebrity is a problem. It's one of the social obstacles that he encounters.
Yes.
It's like, oh, being a celebrity is hard. Man.
And maybe it's in the third movie that at some point he's sort of like the revelation of like just how connected how connected he is to this whole mystery and like why he's so famous. Maybe that comes into the third movie. And so it like does. It puts a lot of pieces into place for him and us as an audience.
And
as well.
Me.
And you.
Specifically.
You, me. David.
Yeah, I think I'd watch those.
I mean, maybe. I feel like I'd get pretty bored.
Yeah.
As a kid. Like, if I was a kid watching these movies, I don't know.
I think the second and third ones would be pretty boring. I think the first one would be awesome. Because it would just
be the opposite.
Magical little kid, like, trying to figure out why cool things are happening and, like, sort of feeling out his magical powers. Cool metaphor for puberty. Also, fun, just a fun movie that you can, like, play around with. It's a big empty canvas, and it wouldn't be very long. It'd be like an hour 20 at most.
Yeah, so what would the overarching themes of each movie be? Because a lot of movie trilogies, they've got, like, the first movie's kind of about this, the second movie's kind of about this, and the third movie's kind of about this, and they all sort of, like, arch together.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, maybe the first one's about sort of, like...
It's like survival.
Survival, almost. Like, perseverance, like, in the face of adversity, like... You know, learning to, I don't know.
Well, I think the learning comes in the second movie. I think the second movie's theme is learning, and both about the mystery and just about what you can do and about what relationships can be. And it's like you're exposed to this new world.
So the first one is about surviving the world you're in. The second one is about learning about the world around you and like new experiences and putting yourself out there and that kind of thing. And the third movie is about discovering what you're capable of within yourself.
Yeah, and with the people around you.
And with the people around you.
What you and your friends can be capable of.
Yes, okay. So the first one is about surviving the world that you're in. The second one's about learning about the world around you. And the third one is learning how to exert yourself and your own will on the world around you and make it a better place.
Yeah, which is just the journey to adulthood.
Yeah, that's, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, when I'm a baby, it's like, what? I'm just going to cry.
Yeah.
That's
all
I do.
And then when you're a kid, you're like, and when you're like a kid, you're like, everything around me is weird. And then when you're an adult, you're like, I am also weird, I guess.
Yeah. Freud said all of that once.
I think it was his most famous work. After My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Freud. Oh, I love Freud.
Yeah.
Well, no, that was great.
Yeah.
Those movies, they fit together. You know, you have to maybe add some apocryphal Harry Potter myths.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That may not be found in the source material.
Right.
But it's
in the
okay.
source material of the movie,
of
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, the only thing. You know, I mean, yeah, obviously. I mean, if you're extending anything into the length of three movies, no matter what it is, you're going to be adding something.
Yeah. But I don't think there are any holes. I think each of those could stand pretty well on its own.
Yeah. They'd all be slightly different, but I think they would all fit thematically better, at least, than the one we did about The Matrix.
Oh, that one was tricky.
At the same time, I would still watch those movies, but those would be three very distinct movies.
Yeah.
Whereas
this
one, you could see them fitting together.
These fit pretty well. Sweet.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Anything else we wanted to do with that one?
I think I would eventually make a prologue. That was
like a prequel?
Yeah. A prequel, but it would be an animated short that showed before a Pixar movie.
Okay.
And it would be about Harry Potter as a baby.
Okay.
And it would be like the Incredibles
Jack-Jack.
And it would be like that. And people would be like trying to take care of him. And then he'd like magic fart on him. And they'd be like, no, Harry, no. And he'd be like, hey. And then his little scar would light up. and wink at the camera and
bing.
Yep, that's what it would be. So that's all that I have to add to this.
And it would be nominated for an Academy Award for Best Animated Short.
Probably.
Yeah, probably. You know, Asia actually, when she was studying abroad in England, the castle that they stayed in they filmed part of this movie in that castle.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a fun little tidbit.
Ooh.
If she were here, I bet she could tell you all about it.
I bet you're right.
But, you know, she's not with us.
She's no longer with us.
She's no longer with us. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Pour one out.
You know what? I'm not going to explain that. I'm not going to walk that back.
No, don't.
It is.
Don't you dare.
It's sitting there. Let's move on to another context.
Let's do it.
All right.
Draw me.
Yeah. Draw me.
Draw me. Draw a context like one of your French contexts.
I was really hoping.
Have we made that joke already?
No.
I'm honestly surprised because I draw me like one of your French girls is one of my favorite things to manipulate.
Okay. This is a new one.
Yes.
This movie promotes the gay agenda. How? Oh, man. Yeah. How does this movie promote the gay agenda?
It's by,
well, we've got two male friends and a girl in desperate need of a makeover.
Yeah, Hermione's a lesbian.
Right.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
And Ron and Harry look into each other's eyes a couple times and smile. They have a good bond.
Quite a few times.
I would say also that they like the avoidance of heterosexual relationships in this movie is mostly pro-gay.
Yeah, well,
as much as you could be in 2001.
Right. For a kids movie where there are no actual like romantic relationships that I can think of.
The hottest person in the movie is Snape, who is super gay, probably.
He does give off a vibe for sure.
I love the vibe. there's that
like late night scene where where Harry's walking through the hallway and it's Snape corners Quirrell and like pushes him up against a wall. Yeah. And like in
that's some pretty arousing shit. I'm sorry.
I'm feeling kind of weird about this one.
Yeah, no, Well, I think we need to stick with the big picture.
Yeah.
It can't be about specific people and scenes.
Right.
It's more about why queerness and why gayness is good.
Okay, here's what it is. He grows up feeling different, feeling alone, feeling isolated for being who he is.
Being a wizard is a metaphor.
Yeah, and he learns that there are other people like him and has to it's a whole new lifestyle and a whole new world, but
a big hairy man comes and takes him away to go learn about his new life.
Right. but then also at the same time, he has to sort of reconcile his place within this new world.
Right.
So it's not just like,
navigating a subculture can be difficult.
Exactly. It's not just like, oh, you're in this new subculture. Everything's changed for you and you're fine. It's like, you're still you. You still have to sort of work with like living through this whole experience and try to figure out yourself.
Yeah.
Which I think is healthy. It's like saying you might discover that you're different from who you're used to being around, but then you find a new group of people and it's like, hey, I feel welcome. I feel included. Yeah. I feel like I'm home. But at the same time, you know, you're still a human being. You've still got a life to live and lessons to learn.
Yeah.
And sometimes you still gotta face down your demons, you know. They're still gonna be there.
But
I do think, it's he's hiding in a cupboard/closet.
Ooh, that's good.
And he
put in there by probably the straightest person that's ever lived, Vernon Dursley.
Well, dropped off by probably the straightest wizard of all time, Albus Dumbledore.
Yeah, I would say there's absolutely no possibility that Dumbledore is
in anything but any way fully queer. Heteronormative.
So hetero.
So
ragingly heterosexual.
Yeah, so genuinely.
Yeah. Just there's no metatextual way I could ever believe that
was gay. There's no universe in which that is not the case.
I would say that like the Muggle world represents heteronormativity and the wizard world, Hogwarts? No. What is it?
Yeah, the Wizarding World. They just call it the Wizarding World.
That's
basically
honestly lazy. They should have a name for it.
Well, I guess by leaving it into like kind of a vague like Wizarding World, it's like it's not a separate reality from ours. It's still within our reality. It's just a part of it that we can't see because we're not a part of it.
Which is
to say that much like homosexuality, it's always been there. It's just that it's invisible to a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a silent group of people who often have to hide themselves for fear of what what the other part of the world will do.
And so if we approach this from the wording of the gay agenda, being of course that it's a bit like coming at it from the perspective of somebody that does not want homosexual people to have rights.
Right.
Then this movie is promoting that they can be in community. And that's the last thing that you want if you're worried about the gays taking over. The last thing you want is for them to actually find each other and be more powerful than you.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Right. And learn from each other and like,
and control you in so many ways, like you are suspicious of if you are afraid of the gays.
But it's also, what I also think is interesting about it is that while, if we're sticking with the metaphor of the wizarding world as basically being sort of a non-heteronormative society,
absolutely,
there are factions within that and like competing interests and like and human drama. So it's also, you know, saying it's like, it's not a monolithic thing,
right?
Like just because two people are gay doesn't mean they're exactly the same,
which I, as a, you know, a lot of our, a lot of our culture would like us to believe.
Exactly.
That a gay person just looks like a gay person
or is. Yeah.
Which like is, you can absolutely just tell, but not true. No, according to Hogwarts.
No.
And I would say, in also reality.
Yeah, exactly.
A hot take.
Hot take. Gay people can be anybody, really.
It could be anyone.
Yeah. And it's fine. It's like, just be normal. And it turns out you just have a different, you're born a different way. Oh, no.
Wow.
Yeah.
Some people got that wizard blood. You know,
but it's also like a special thing. It's like, it's not just that you're different. It's that it's like kind of special. It's kind of like you're different in a way that not that a smaller percentage of people are. But there's already a welcoming community who was different like you, and you can learn together and you can grow together. And I think that's really empowering. Although I do really love the idea of talking about Harry Potter, a franchise that already has the ire of so many religious conservatives, and being like, but also it could be about promoting homosexuality. Yeah. So it's like,
whew. I mean, but have you thought of this other way that you hate Harry Potter?
Right, exactly. It's like you already hated it, but let's hate it some more, I guess.
Well, I'll be honest, when this context came out, I was skeptical. I was like, how are we going to do this? But this feels almost, I mean,
it's almost on the nose.
This is a good interpretation of Harry Potter.
It is.
It's not even, like, it's funny in a way, like, because it's like, ha ha ha, this movie clearly isn't actually an argument for the gay agenda, but it is an argument for a mistreated person that is different.
Yeah.
Finding community and culture in a way that they didn't have before because people are willing to accept them because they all share the same cool thing about them.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it is. And I think if you trace a lot of children's film and literature, a lot of it, especially the stuff that comes from an angle of like, this is a main character who is different and they're trying to sort of reconcile that difference with the world around them. Yeah. I think, you know, contextually, you can fit that into any sort of difference narrative, some othering kind of narrative.
Totally.
I think in this case, we're doing it through the filter of like a gay agenda kind of thing. But
although if racism had come up, we probably could have tied that in as well.
Well, if racism had come up, I think we would have had a few other things to say.
There would have been some other stuff.
There's some other stuff to bring up in this movie.
Right. But marginalization in general can be applied to the world of Harry Potter. And I think that makes it a good kid story, actually, because it lets you talk about it.
I think the era that we've been in over the past like 15, 20 years has been just sort of a real sea change in terms of how people talk about homosexuality and how it's become sort of like it's become a more universally understood difference, but also there's a community built up around it that is more visible now than they've ever been and stronger politically, socially, economically. Like there's a culture that is being recognized after years of having to not say anything, you know? And I think that's a special thing. And I think that, you know, seeing a story like this and thinking like, this could fit a narrative of different sexualities, different sexual orientations. And thinking that is like, and we're talking about the heroes. Like it's
right. It's not the tragic side character that dies and has unrequited love for the main character. No, these are all of the heroes of this movie, the old ones and the young ones.
Exactly.
Are this different.
Yes.
And it's okay.
And yes. And I think teaching that lesson to kids and being like, not only is it like that, I keep going back to the diversity angle because it's not just you know, a kid finds out he's gay and then he finds this world where everyone's gay and it's everything's great.
I mean, that sounds cool.
I mean, that sounds cool, but it's like he goes to this other culture and he finds that there are other human beings who he doesn't like. There are ones that he does like. He has right. friends. He has enemies.
Very realistic.
It's just showing that, like, just because you're in this community of different, you know, of people with the same thing doesn't mean everyone's the same, like we talked about. And I think that's almost a better lesson for a kid to learn.
Yeah.
Is that not only is it okay to be different, it's okay to be different within other people who are different the same way that you're different.
So true. You don't have to get along with everybody that likes the same things that you do, let right. alone that is the same way that you are, et cetera,
But you can feel that sense of community. You can feel that sense of identity and have that and still, like, disagree with individual people, but you feel more connected knowing that there are other people like you.
Yeah, like Gay Malfoy.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Gay group.
I also thought of Gary Potter, but that's just a fun, like, it's not a thing.
Yeah, what are some other bad ones? No, I can't think of any more.
Ron. Nailed it.
Ron.
That's it. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this movie fits that context better than I was expecting.
Yeah,
too.
No, I agree. I think it does. Nice job, Chris Columbus.
Way to go. Yeah, Chris Columbus, who I'm sure definitely thought of this.
He had all of this in mind.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
You know, total... Were the wet bandits gay?
Oh, hell yeah. Wet bandits? Steal each other's virginity, more like.
I'm just thinking, like, maybe Chris Columbus has a pattern that I never saw before. Wow. What did we talk about this time, huh?
Number one. Sound design.
Yeah.
Well,
score. Song choice.
Not even sound design. Sound design. Foley? How would you Foley this
What
movie?
Would it be like if Dave Foley was Harry Potter?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I'd watch it.
I mean, it would be really uncanny and weird. Yeah. Like a 10-year-old Dave Foley?
No,
or
I'm
like
saying like
40-year-old
news radio era Dave Foley.
Only if Andy Dick could be the broomstick. I don't know why I insist on including Andy Dick in everything.
I don't know why either.
I don't know why. I really
wish you'd stop.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm a man. I put my dick into everything.
Please cut that. Context number two.
That was the worst.
Context number two was, if you pulled a Peter Jackson and split this into three movies, how would you do it?
And we did it.
And we did it. It took some doing, but we did it.
Yeah. I got a real hankering to go mail some letters when I saw Harry just getting showered in that mail.
Ugh.
Yeah. Speaking of being showered in that mail, context number four. How does this movie promote the gay agenda?
Oh my God. What?
Wow.
Holy shit.
Is it over? Is that it?
That
was honestly a coincidence. Like,
no,
I'm not even kidding.
It worked.
It just worked
so well. You know, sometimes life just finds a way. Wow. Okay. So yeah, the gay agenda. Well, that's been. Wow. All right. Well. So let's recap the things you're definitely going to want to remember from this episode. First, who's in your peed?
Who's in your peed? Who is?
Hey, who's in your peed?
Who's in your peed?
Okay, David, who's in your peed?
Oh, shit.
How about we do the one where you're also in the peed?
I'm in the peed?
You have to have two other segments in your peed.
I'm the end peed because I'm very empathetic and I don't want to poop in anyone's mouth. I just want to take it.
Okay. Wow. Very, so, very self-sacrificial.
I mean, there's no way to talk about this that isn't gross, so I'm just leaning into it.
Right.
I think I want my face to be sewn to the butt of Doug Jones from The Shape of Water.
Okay.
That's a pretty good butt.
It's a pretty good butt.
And I'm I'm not going to see them, and I'm not going to be able to talk to them, so I might as well just have my face buried in a good butt. And then I want Doug Jones's face to be buried in Guillermo's butt. Guillermo's butt. So, I want it to be, because it, essentially it already is. I'm sure Doug Jones is brown nosing Guillermo all the damn time.
Oh,
so we might as well just make it reality.
Jesus Christ.
Because honestly, I can't figure out why I would choose people to be in my peed. It's a tough question.
Yeah, it is. It is. But it reveals a lot about you.
Which is that I recently saw The Shape of Water.
Right, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
That's what it revealed.
Well, but hey, what a revelation.
My second tier would be my face would be buried in Littlefoot from The Land Before Time's butt.
Aww.
Because, you know, he's a dinosaur.
And he's a vegetarian.
Yeah, so his poo would be fine. And then Littlefoot would have his head sewn to the butt of...
The Good Dinosaur.
Of the movie The Good Dinosaur.
Of the movie The Good Dinosaur.
A DVD of the movie The Good
Not
Dinosaur.
Even
not even
on
Blu-ray?
Oh, no.
Nope. No, it would be the data on the cloud of the movie The Good Dinosaur. It wouldn't even be a physical
the
copy.
The ultraviolet copy of The Good Dinosaur.
My voodoo password. That's on my peed.
Oh, Christ. Okay. And then, of course, showered in mail.
Showered in mail.
Wow. Okay, well, that's been an episode of Contextual Deviance.
Yeah.
My name is Christian Hagen. I've been your host today. I'm so happy you were able to join me again, David. David, do you have any other plugs in addition to your other show, which I think you should bring up?
No, I am on the Hypothetic Cast. I produce and star on the Hypothetic Cast. It's pretty fun. It's a pretty good time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I would say my only other plug right now is to go see Savage Umbrella's show, The Ravagers. It's at the X Lab at Can Can Wonderland, which is in St. Paul. One, if you haven't been to Can Can Wonderland, artist-inspired mini golf and themed cocktails. Plus, you get to see a show about a cult and some murders. So I don't know why you're the only reason that you should be listening to this show right now instead of going to see that is if you're in the car on your way to see the Ravagers. Yeah, because podcasts are perfect for driving.
Yeah.
That's all. That's it.
Well, that's a fantastic plug.
Thanks.
Sweet.
That's what Harry Potter said.
In the meantime, David, do you have any final thoughts for us?
The lake is a long way from here.
Thank you for listening to Contextual Deviants. If you'd like to reach out to us online, you can find us on Twitter at @ContextualDeviants or email us at contextualdeviants@gmail.com. Special thanks to Minneapolis' own The Bad Man for the use of the song Gun Tonic off of their album Ain't Clean. Thank you very much for listening. I've been your host, Christian Hagen. Have a nice day. Have a nice day!
Hey. Have you seen Swordfish?
No, but have you seen Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone?
No.
Oh.
Sorry, but have you seen Swordfish?
What a wonderful bit. A wonderful, successful, saved bit that will definitely be used.
Save it.
I don't know, man. Well, actually, it was called Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone originally, but when they imported it to the U.S., they changed the title. By the way, have you seen Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone?
By the way.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about it then.
Sorcery. Oh, yes, magic spell.
Oh, you're a wizard, Harry.
Oh, Harry. You could do some with some magic.
But you're such a wizardy morse, Harry. Oh, what a morsel of magic you are. A morsel of magic you are.
I just want to eat you up.
I just want to devour you in my whole being. I'm going to mash you up in my little munchers.
Oh, shit.
My little magical muncher mashes.
Let's talk about it. That whole thing.
That whole thing.
If there, it's like sometimes when we're doing the show, we are like, okay, we kind of look at each other and we're like, well, if people haven't left yet, they've left now.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
As it's just like, let's test it. Like, let's see if they really like how we want to be funny.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, then get on out of here.